Net Podcast.
Third Degree, the podcast, is brought to you by our listeners and fans, people just like you, those that support us at patreon.com/thirddegree. Since 1997, we've been covering pro soccer in the Dallas area, starting with FC Dallas and now encompassing all the other teams in the region. We hope you enjoy our coverage. If you've been here since the beginning, or if you're a brand new fan, we'd love if you consider supporting us at patreon.com/thirddegree. Now on with the show.
Well, hello there, DFW Soccer Curious. Welcome to another episode of Third Degree, the podcast. Gang is all here. Dan Crook, howdy, Dan.
Hello. It's a great victory. No, it's not.
And your hero, my hero, everybody's hero, editor, founder, thirddegree.net. And the original soccer influencer himself, Buzz Carrick. Come in, Buzz. Literally.
Peter, I set the over-under at the number of times you say kiss your sister in today's podcast at 2.5.
It is a kiss your sister episode.
I feel like you're going to blow that number out now.
No, you screwed your own bet. Did you take the over?
No, I just set the line. I didn't.
You
make
just
a
set
bet.
The line. Yeah. Oh,
okay. I would have taken the over on 2.5 for sure.
So here we are. Yes, Buzz, you're correct. It is a kiss your sister episode as Nashville comes to town and ends up donuts. Buzz, I'm just going to tell you straight up. I fell asleep about the 25th minute, woke up to the Apple TV music at halftime, and not much to talk about. This was an absolute snoozer of a soccer game, not one for the highlight reels.
Yeah, it ain't exciting. One of the downsides, if you will, for a team that's, maybe trying to build a little hype with the World Cup or trying to build some hype for the fact they're going to have a fill up a stadium in another year and a half, is that Quill's current style is not particularly exciting. If they're not getting forward in a quick attacking sort of mindset, it gets pretty boring pretty fast because they play a very defensive shell with five across the back and then three across in front of them at the current time. I think over time, I think that'll change. But, for right now, that is what it is. And so it's going to be really boring, particularly. The only way those games get livened up is when someone can score. Either way, frankly, particularly if Dallas can, get a Musa or a Farrington goal, because that's basically what they're doing, is they're bunkering and just hoping for a Musa Farrington miracle. So, it's not ever going to be exciting. Or not ever. Sorry. It's not right now going to be exciting. Hopefully, within by midseason, maybe it'll a little more exciting. We'll see how that goes.
Dan, for a game that had a XG combined between two games of less than one, what is the upside for any FC Dallas fan to take away from this one?
Unbeaten. That's really it. Clean sheet. You mentioned you fell asleep.
Maybe I missed something really good.
Well, actually, you kind of did. Petr Musa had a shot in the 44th minute that was like the first thing that happened in the half. It was pretty good. It was saved, but on FotMob they have the game momentum. It swings back and forth, up and down, all that. During the game, it actually flatlined for like half an hour. They've since adjusted it, and it looks like they've kind of favored it towards Nashville, but the thing had no movement for a very long time.
Maybe the momentum meter was broken for that period of time. No.
Maybe someone just came back and went, God, this looks terrible. We need to do something here.
The game was flatlined. Buzz, my observation about what's going on so far, and again, I say this with great reservation because we're only two games into this. And I will even say this happened because I wanted to put a lot of this on Delgado. But I'm going to, Vientte came into the game. Did we come to an agreement it's pronounced Vientte?
Valiente.
Valiente. Valiente?
Yeah. Means the brave, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Valiant, yeah.
Yeah, like valiant, kind of, yep.
Valiente comes into the game, and, I can't tell you much about the guy. He didn't get to do a lot, although he played a lot less than Delgado, and had maybe four less touches in the game than Delgado, which I wanted to blame it all on Patrickson. But the way that Quill has this team set up with those three center midfielders just standing in a compact flat line in front of the back five, dude, it's rough. It's boring.
Yeah.
And he, you know, the commentators were a few times during the game kept talking about how they had met with Quill in the lead up to the game. And Quill had told his players that his instruction was, guys, as soon as you get the ball, play the ball forward. I don't care if you turn the ball over. I won't be mad at you. Please, first pass, play the ball forward. And my observation is they're all trying to do that, and they all suck at it. They're terrible at passing the ball forward to each other. I stopped counting the turnovers before I fell asleep, especially between the three midfielders.
Yeah. Right now, there's one center back that can pass fairly well, and that's Urigide. And the guy that the guy that's responsible for sort of getting forward a little bit of that combo is Christian Kappas. He's the one guy of that group that actually is a linking player and can turn the ball and dribble through a couple of guys and make a pass and set somebody up. But because I guess Ramiro was either had a knock that wasn't reported or was benched or were worried about him against the pace coming through the midfield of Nashville, whatever it was, they put Kappas in that deep lying stay at home position. And so Delgado did not do nearly good a job, as you mentioned, of doing the linking sort of play that Kappas does really well. And Kaique is terrible at that. Kaique is a good potential player. He's a good defensive player. His energy is really high. He does not link well yet. He can pass okay, but that's not necessarily the same thing. You have to be able to have downfield vision and make a line-splitting pass, not just a pass. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Like even worse than when Ramiro is in there and Kappas is playing forward, it's better than it was in this one when Kappas was sitting deep and Delgado's in there was bad. Now, you also brought up Valiente. Well, he didn't particularly do anything, but there was a whole lot of stuff on display that made you go, made me anyway, go, oh, that's nice. You know, quality of the touch, quality of the passes, banged off a couple of guys, kept the ball, kept going, was looking to split. Defenders got into the box. Really, you could clearly tell he wants to be a 10 and not an 8. There has to be a discussion eventually if he's going to become a starter. And don't kid yourself, he's not a U22 signing. You don't bring in a guy at, I think, 24 if you don't think he's going to be starting at some point, and that will require a tactical change. But you're right. When they sit in this Christmas tree, this 5-3, man, it can get, you know, Quill is not a high possession guy, but he does like to play out and not just boot it all the time. And the play out is just really bad, really bad. You know, like they flipped it back, and it, but the Ibiaga, at least the play balanced out. It was this time, it was instead of being like 50% left, it was now like 40% each side. So that was better, but there just isn't a lot of passing ability, line breaking ability in this current setup.
Well, the complicating factor is that if somebody plays the ball long, because eight of the players are all back in their final third of the field, odds are they're just turning the ball over because Farrington and Musa are left, you know, kind of helpless. Each of them's probably double teamed to some degree.
But they're both playing so deep as well. I mean, if you look at the position map, Haney Mukhtar played as a false nine, and he was on average like 3 yards behind Petr Musa.
Well, this is why it's so important to have those wingbacks be capable of running up there. They do want, you know, Musa or Farrington to hold up a little bit so that one of the mids, supposed to be Kappas normally, can get forward. And so you get two wingbacks and Kappas coming up underneath you, and you get your five attackers going forward. Well, in this game, that wasn't happening because Kappas was in a different position. Delgado didn't do it. Everyone was sitting back. Brendan was getting yelled at all game by Ibiaga.
Me?
Every time you turn around, he was yelling at him. You know, it's like... you know, granted, Bernie had Christian Espinosa on that side, who was a hell of a player. So maybe he was, you know, sitting deeper than he might normally. Bernie did not release as much as he does normally, I wouldn't say. Usually you get some offense out of him that makes the bad defense worth it, but that in this game, that didn't happen.
There was a moment, I can't remember who it was, but they flicked the ball back over the head, and there was a real fear in the press box that, oh no, Bernie's realized you can face forward and still pass backwards.
Yeah, he does pass backwards a lot. Yeah.
So trying to figure out where the silver lining in this is to remember that Nashville in their season opener won 4-1 over the Revolution. Now, again, Surridge being out due to illness was a factor in this, but it's not like Nashville fielded a toothless team by any imagination. And by and large, they were very successful in kind of stifling Nashville. And I let me put it this way. My takeaway from this game is I was far more disappointed in Nashville than I was excited or emotional about Dallas. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I expected a lot more out of Nashville in this game.
Yeah, well, you know, they did have some Champions League games, but they won that series 8-0, so it's not like they were tested.
They were very tight at the entire team, that didn't factor.
Yeah. So, honestly, look, you go back to the late last season, right, when Quill changed formations, it was all about locking down the defense. And in this game, and earlier this season, it's the same thing. We're locking down the defense. 7 shots and only 1 shot on target by Nashville. That's mission accomplished for what this formation is for. Now, it's early in the season. Quill has talked a lot this spring about how, because of the way the schedule works, and they have like 9 home games in the first 15 or something, they have to grind out all these points before the World Cup happens. So he's going uber defensive and locking it down and not letting in any goals. I think over time, he will try and get in some more of offensive pieces. He has to do it without letting the defense fall apart. So, you know, that's my optimistic view, is that down the line, you'll try and get Valiente in there. You know, you'll try and have a more offensive mindset. You know, maybe it's more of a double pivot with a real 10, you know, rather than this triple 6-8 thing that they're doing. So, you know, that's my hope. Otherwise, I can't really say what's going on.
If he was going to start Valiente, let's say this weekend in LA,
yeah,
do you think he sticks with the flat 3 in the middle, or does he let Valiente play a little more a little more forward?
Tactics are fluid. So there will be defensive sets where it'll come back and sit into a 3. Last year, when Delgado was playing this more 10-like shape, he would still come back and sit in the flat 3 defensively. But there'll be an expectation that Valiente will probably drift higher quite a bit more, and he will get forward into a real 10 position. And the other two guys will sort of set up, I'm assuming, will set up in more of a double pivot, you know, or if one of them, if it's Cabas and Ramiro, Cabas will release a little bit. If it's Cabas and Caic, they'll probably take turns sort of releasing a little bit. I mean, it's obviously going to be under construction in a sense, just like the stadium, in terms of like exactly how it's going to work. Valiente has been here for like a week and a half, so like they probably don't 100% know how it's going to work. But, you know, there will be situations where, of course, they want to sit back. Even Musa or Farrington has been coming back and sitting in a defensive shell. So, you know, that's obviously still a priority. But I think that if you're going to free up Valiente and actually take advantage of him, you have to sort of go more of a double pivot look, particularly as you get forward.
Quick thing just on the game itself, talking about the shape and actually getting forward. Spoke to Isaze Rigide after the game and sort of asked him, you know, it kind of seemed like, you know, you weren't really getting forward as much as you were, you know, kind of giving more of that playing out the back role to Sebastian Ibiaga. He mentioned, you know, just with Mukhtar playing as that false nine, he was kind of pushed up more on Mukhtar and you know, they kind of had to force the ball over to Ibiaga to play out the back. So, you know, hopefully you see with other teams not playing a false nine, you should see a little bit more normal service resumed and Isaze getting more touches. Granted, he led the game in touches, but, you know, actually like progressive touches.
He also had 15 clearances.
He had 11 defensive actions in the first half alone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a high number and obviously indicative of how the game was going a bit for that period of time. So
yeah, he was phenomenal. His performance was well worth Team of the Week. Yeah, without getting a goal, for a defender to get Team of the Week is really says something about how good he was.
Yeah, I finished the game and I thought, oh man, Isaze had to be man of the match. And when I watched your instant reaction video, I was pleased to see that was your first one right off the bat. So,
well, Kappas was really good too, particularly in the asked him to play a different role, but Irgine was so good. It was just impossible not to give it to him. He was just an absolute dominant force in the back.
Yeah, by and large, I thought defensively they looked really solid. I mean, they had a couple of moments that I think Nashville probably ruse. They didn't do better with the opportunity. Espinoza had a couple of opportunities. Mukhtar. But nothing that was a screamingly obvious, sit or miss or anything like that. And I don't ever really remember a moment where I thought Colodi had to do anything wild or make one some save. Sort of magic save. Yeah.
I may have been asleep. Say if it's Passius, but he stabbed it wide from pretty close. It looked like a sitter.
Okay. So I'm curious to hear from both of you guys. Because we're two games in now, and I'm just wondering if you guys have started to develop any thoughts on judgment on Johansson so far.
I think it's a little difficult to form anything off that game specifically, just because they really invited everything down Dallas's left. Between, carrying the ball for Espinoza and Nahar, and then, obviously... they lose the ball and it's going up the left naturally. I definitely felt like Johansson was a little bit closed out, maybe because they felt he was better than Bernie, maybe because it was just the way that they play. I don't really know how their shape normally lines up in that sense. But yeah, he's definitely still getting to grips with the league.
As I mentioned, the play right and left was more balanced in this game. They went more up the right than they did the previous game. I think it's particularly nice that he, as you watch them build up that side, it doesn't happen a lot because they don't build a lot because they're not great passing. But he always puts himself in really nice positions to make little line-breaking triangles and he clearly knows how to do it and knows how to build, and not everybody in that group knows. Like, he's looking inside at Shaq Moore and Kaik. So, Shaq Moore's okay, but Kaik's not great at, this positional bing, 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 bing up the field. But Johansson's right there for that. And then he's so big that he's deceptively fast. He doesn't look like he's running fast, but then he's running by the outside back. So, there's a real nice balance to his game. That's my early takeaway. He hasn't been impactful yet on the game. Maybe so it's 2 weeks into, a new team. He was a late arrival in camp, so he hardly got any time to really work his way into the team, work his way into the system. We know he's still – on a minute restriction. They upped his minutes by 10 minutes this game. At least I assume it's still a restriction because it was week one for sure. And they gave him 10 more minutes in this game. So he's playing his way into fitness. He looks like a really nice piece. I think he really matches the level of Major League Soccer. I don't see again, it's 2 weeks, but I don't see a player that you think, oh, he should be playing in the top six teams in the Premier League. He looks like a guy that this is the right level for him. Which would mean he probably his next move could have been, maybe into the Dutch league or something like that, or Belgium or something. And MLS is right there with those leagues. I think it's equivalent for me of talent level, skews definitely great teams aside, of course. But, he looks well at home. Wolf, it's a really good fit, for the way Quill wants to play. It seems, I think it's a nice, solid, solid piece, not a game breaking piece, but a really good, it's a dude upgrade. He's a starter level upgrade, I think, on that side for sure.
Okay. Bernie, obviously, I think universally, we would all agree, had another poor game. And in fact, again, the commentator made a comment that he asked about Bernie to Quill, and Quill said he's got to have a better game. And it kind of intimated that maybe he was considering options over there. And I'm not 100% sure what that option is, but I am curious about your guys thinking about what to do about Bernie, if anything.
Well, I wanted to say this, when you first said that they said they talked to Quill. Quill doesn't really necessarily always tell those guys correct information, because I remember last year quite frequently they would get into the start of the game and they'd be like, yeah, Quill told us that this was going to happen. And I'm like, you're out of your mind if you think that's going to happen. And of course it didn't happen. And then, we were really told that guy was going to be the left back. No, that guy has never played left back in his life. It's like, so you have to take some of that stuff they say with a grain of salt. But I do think that Bernie has to be, he's gotten all the benefit that he can from his coach, I think. Because this game was worse than the first one. It was quite clear that his teammates were yelling at him, and it really seemed like in the second half they almost stopped passing to him. And when your teammates stop passing to you, that's a real problem. So, you know, I think there's a legitimate case that it may be time to give somebody else a run out there. Now, who that would be is a good question. Probably based on spring, Ricky Lewis, who's the first round pick, the second overall pick, is probably the guy. But you know how Quill is about 20-year-olds. You know, you could do something hypothetically like putting Abubakar in at center back and put Shaq Moore at left wing back. He can do that. Probably not back to Torquato. He really hasn't played much since that game he got torched last year. That was for the last minute he played. He needs to rebuild himself a little bit at North Texas, which is where he was. Lucius Dietschen maybe is a value on that side. You know, he's left footed, and so as a wing back, that's okay. You can put him over there. So he's got some options, and he probably has to be thinking about it this time because that was one of the poorer games I can remember Bernie playing in some time.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Dietzen's come in for Bernie twice now kind of puts him in pole position there, surely.
I would say that any level of enthusiasm I had about Dietzen when he debuted on the right in the first game was somewhat washed away by him trying to play on the left because I don't think that's his strong suit. I think he's a right-sided player, isn't he?
Yeah, he plays, you know, right wing as a left-footed player. When he's at a high wing, he comes in and cuts inside and shoot, you know, switch foot wings. Right. That's very, very common. As a wing back, switch foot wing back is much more rare. So, like, he has the correct footedness to play on left wing back. Quill is not anywhere near married to playing, you know, a lefty at left wing back. It's just that Dietzen is in the discussion at that spot. Just as Ricky Lewis is, just as maybe like an adaptation with Shaq Moore is. So
yeah, he just didn't look as comfortable on the left as he does on the right. It's just my general observation.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be any worse for Dietzen, right? I mean, it's like he's not really comfortable at either wingback spot. He's not a wingback. Right. So, but you know, if you're going to carry through one of my philosophies, which is don't change two things to fix one thing, just change the one thing, and that would be just put somebody in for Bernie, that person probably right now is Dietzen. Maybe in a month or two, it might be Ricky Lewis. Like maybe today, though, it might be Dietzen. I don't think Sam Sarver would be in that conversation, put him on the wrong side, that he would not be comfortable over there. So I think that's probably
pretty rough on the right, too.
Sam, yeah, Sam had a really bad game, too. At some point, you're running sort of out of options of like, yes, maybe Bernie needs to sit, but like, what do we have that's actually any better? The coach is thinking that, what do I have? What do we have that's actually any better? And really right now, as much as you think Ricky Lewis would be great eventually, maybe you're not ready to trust that at 20. Maybe, you know, Dietzen, international experience, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's give him a try. See how that works.
Okay. How much do you think they missed starting Romero? How much did that impact the game at all, if any?
Not much because he just sits at home. He doesn't really do anything. The impact was that it made Kappas play in a different position and changed Kappas' role. That was the impact. So Romero is super reliable and he's a great leader, but like he doesn't impact the game in demonstrative ways when he's in or not in. You know, it's like he's just a really reliable piece that the coach knows he can stick him in there and not have a real huge problem. It's just like you can just do it, you know. I don't think anyone would look at him and think, oh, yeah, that's the guy that's going to change the game. You know, clearly at this point, Kappas is by far your best midfielder, and he's literally the coach on the field. You know, he's the one that's going to put Quill's message out there because he's dialed in with him so much. So, like, you know, you could argue that while he's not the most talented player, you could argue he's probably the most important player in the team right this minute because of their lack of anything else in that general part of the field.
Well, with the draw, that puts Dallas in seventh on 4 points, tied with a whole slate of teams around them, Minnesota, Austin, L.A. Now, next up, they have to take their first road trip out to LAFC to face off against the 2-0 and looking very dangerous, mighty machine of Hollywood. Yeah. Good times.
Very, very. I mean, obviously, you've got the Denny Buanga Sunny combo going on. Just took a quick look at their team and all of their front six have a goal contribution so far. They obviously haven't conceded in their two games, scored five. That game with Houston, a little bit weird, but with the red cards, but terrifying, right?
Yeah, they're look, that's what that team is built for, and they've got those two guys are, I mean, they'd start. Miami would take you. I mean, any team in the league would have either one of those guys as a starter.
Yeah, I think that with their CONCACAF involvement, they have to be looking at Dallas as a, you know, mid to the bottom team relative to them, and you might actually see rotation. They might actually rest some dudes, you know, at home against FC Dallas. I mean, you know, it's not like they're going to be burning out this early in the season, but they have a heavy load over the next whatever because of they'll probably make a deep run in CONCACAF, and so you might take a rest when you can. I'm not talking about a full rotation, but you might see a guy or two sit, you know, not get their very best 11. I think there's a good chance.
The only thing that kind of counts against FC Dallas is they are gonna, you know, they're playing the first leg, but they're playing at home after playing Dallas, and it's what, you know, 5 out of 6 games at home, so it's not like they've got a crazy travel schedule.
Yeah,
that's gonna play on it too.
It's early in the year. There won't be burnout yet, but it's like, you know, they might just look at their huge load that they're going to think they're going to have up to the World Cup and might think, oh, maybe one or two guys could sit on this one. You know, they'll need a decent team, but not going to have to necessarily go full bore for FC Dallas, I don't think.
Yeah, but I have no idea if this is worth anything, but it is technically their first league home game because the game against Miami was played in the Coliseum, not at their home field.
Right.
And they played the game against Houston in Stinkville. So I don't know if that changes anything for them in terms of wanting to put their stars on the field, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It is a very daunting task. And if Dallas could go there, I would anticipate the full 5-3-2, maybe 5-4-1 or something like that.
Yeah. No, 5-3-2.
We'll be on order for the day.
They'll keep Boosin and Farrington. Obviously, you know, the back three, I think, will stay the same as it was with Johansson. The question is Bernie. Like, we discussed that already. Maybe that'll be Dietzen instead. The question is the midfield, like, because Kappas was questionable going into the last game. So he had some kind of knock. Why did Romero get dropped? Did Romero get dropped because he was bad? Or does Romero have some kind of thing we don't know about? I think it's too early to say start Valiente. I think he needs at least one more game off the bench because there is a tactical adaptation they need to work on a little bit. So I would assume you're looking at, you know, Romero, Kaique, Kappas in the midfield, if everyone's healthy, you know, with a nod to attempting to get Valiente in earlier, maybe get him a 30-minute run out, you know, see where that's at. Because I'm convinced, just based on what I assume he costs, that they're going to be efforting really quickly within 3 or 4 weeks to have him be a starter. And something has to change, you know, and Kaique and Romero are very similar players. So one of those two guys is probably going to sit. And so, you know, if Romero did have some sort of knock, that might be an ideal guy to bring Valiente in for, perhaps. Or since Kappas had a questionable, maybe Kappas is that guy. One of the things I think is fascinating is that they have not been trying Kaique as the center six guy. Like when they've been leaving Romero in, you know, and using him and not like sub Romero out and then slid Kaique inside. Like they haven't tried that. So there must be something about Kaique's game that Quill's a little nervous about as the middle six. Probably those 2 foot.
Yeah, I wonder what it is.
That he gets.
I
mean,
that's the best thing about Romero is he's kind of that slow it down, calm Kaique as much as anything.
He's not quite the golden retriever puppy he was when he got here, but he's still got a lot of puppy in him.
Yeah, he's improving. You know, but he's good for a flyer. Yeah.
Back at the beginning of the season, when you know the rumor mill was going about sales and trades and stuff, there was, and I don't know if we talked about this here on the podcast,
a little
rumor that there was a Brazilian club interested in Kaique, and I wondered if you could get back what you paid for Kaique. And you're Dan and Clark Hunt. Do you do that deal?
If you're Dan and Clark, no. if you're me, yes. I would take the money and get my money and go. Like, I think he's an interesting player. He's an exciting player. But, like, I think he's a little bit disruptive to what Quill's trying to do. I think that feels like a player that wasn't necessarily a Quill buy, but a team buy. And so Quill might say, yeah, yeah, that's cool. I'm still trying to get Valiente on there. We just got Ran Ben Yamin, who is interesting looking. You know, I got Delgado, who I still like. You know, like, he's got other people. He likes Caleb Swan. They kept him in town in case Cabas couldn't go. Like, they like him. Quill likes Diego Garcia. So, like, there's a lot of bodies in those 8-6 positions to, if you could get your money back. Because remember, they overspent for him because of the late interest somebody else had.
How much profit do you think they would have to get Zanata? Or Zenota, whatever it is.
Oh, a mil or two, I think. 5 or 6. Yeah, like, that would do it. Like, just get your money back and maybe a little bit more, I think. You know, that'd be my guess.
So it's a it's not a function of they love the player so much they're going to have to make an ass load of money to sell him. It's we're not going to give him away, but...
He's one of those players that you could just throw a decent sell on. And then, you know, if he comes good, great. You
keep a percentage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get your money back and keep 25%. I would do that. You know, because the team that wanted him was going to sell a player. They were looking for, like, the next guy. And it's a club that would, like, he would go back there and then they would build him up. And in a couple of years, they would sell him for a lot more, you know. So it's one of those kind of clubs. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but it's somebody that even Zanotti even had a link to. So it wasn't like they were putting in offers. They were contemplating it for, like, this next window coming up was kind of the thing that he was on the short list of replacements. But yeah, you know, I don't, there's nothing in his game that makes me think, oh, no, keep that. It's not like Pepe where I'm like, oh, dude, you wait for the 20, you know, it's, if you could get 5, 4 or 5 or with a sell on, I would absolutely do it.
Okay.
Mainly because of the logjam in that position. They have a boatload of dudes, right, that can play that spot.
Well, next up, as we said, LAFC, the juggernaut. And I'm going to assume that means they're going to have to wear those awful Inferno kits again.
Yes, they are. Yeah, I've seen it already there. Yep. Can we throw down a comment about Matthew Corcoran, my dude, playing for Nashville? How good he was?
Was he?
Other than the red card. He was phenomenal until the red card. He was so good, man, in that game. He was part of why Dallas could do nothing. I got, you know, photos from the game from two different people, and just about every photo of an FC Dallas attacker, Matthew Corcoran is bodying up and taking the ball off of him. It's just, the dude was just phenomenal. Now, he lost his cool on Kaik and then, you know, got sent off, but he was great.
Yeah, I wonder how much of our heaping praise upon him is the fact that he's a former FC Dallas product and we love him and we wish he was playing for our team, because I have a feeling that if that exact same game played out for some random holding mid for another team that wasn't a former FC Dallas product, we'd be talking about is the fact that he was very immature and silly for getting a second yellow and going in on that tackle when he didn't need to.
I don't think so. I certainly have a bias towards him because I still think he's the smartest 15-year-old soccer player I've ever seen, and I couldn't believe that Dallas didn't understand how great he was. But, you know, when I watch him play, he plays like, to me, he reminded me of Joao Pinto, who's another player I've raved about for Seattle. You know, there's a certain way he plays, and his touch and his read and his pass, the commentators are talking about the line breaking he does, his passing, his vision. You know, he's 20, and the dude is a lock starter at this point. You know, granted, he went red mist. Kaik has a tendency to do that to people.
Well, I don't even think the tackle was a red mist tackle. I think he just thought he was going to win the ball, and it was just a badly timed and poor decision tackle.
Yeah, maybe that's more appropriate than red mist. He definitely, you know, did not make a smart play there. You know, late in the game, tired, it happens. You know, certainly we've had seen lots of guys make poor late decisions and get red cards before. But
yeah.
I just thought his game was fantastic.
Well, he's a nice player, and I do wonder sometimes if there's at all a conversation in the front office about how in the hell did we let that one get away from us. But I also partially think that the family never had any intent. I don't know if Dallas could have done anything to keep him.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been led to. Like, you know, granted, that was all conversation after he left. So, like, it's hard to really know what was going on when he did leave. I know there was not, or I've been told there was not an actual offer on the table when he left. I've also been told that he didn't really want to come through the system here. He wanted to play in USL so he could make his debut earlier and play more. So, you know.
Yes, but I do wonder if, and we, I'll ask Corcoran this question someday, which is, especially because now he's a guy running another team in town trying to build their own academy system, you know, and had his son, you know, go the path that he did. The question I would ask him or his dad is, the plan was never for you to end up back at another Major League Soccer team, I assume. I assume that you chose to leave Dallas and go the USL route so that you could find your way to Europe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Probably. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, from what I understand, it was about, you know, playing at a higher level earlier. Like, he would have had to have waited longer to get into the first team if he'd have stayed at FC Dallas. My impression from talking to Brian, his dad, is that that was what it was more about. You know, and it worked in the sense of, like, Nashville was like, oh, this is a great kid. We had to get him. You know, whether he thought he was going to go to Europe or not, I can't answer that, you know.
Yeah, and maybe it worked out because he did end up playing and now starting for a Major League Soccer team. And his next step is after this is to go to Europe. And this is
probably
the better path than trying to wait it out here in Dallas. Interesting. But it is fun to see him playing for a team. And it does suck that it's not for us.
Yeah.
Exactly. What was the reception in the stadium, Dan, when he got the second yellow?
I mean, nothing specific to him as much as just a red card. His family were going batshit crazy. They were kind of seated behind the benches. But
I'm sure 99% of the people in the stands have no idea that kid.
I was just going to say.
but they saw a grouping of Nashville jerseys with Corcoran on the back. And,
yeah, I think you're right. I was just thinking that as I was asking the question, like, what percentage of people in the stands had any idea that kid was formerly their product?
Yeah, very, very small. People that listen to this podcast, maybe, because we hadn't talked about him in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Anything else about Football Club Dallas before we move on to other things? Okay. We'll take that as a no. Dallas Trinity had the I-45 showdown at the Cotton Bowl at the exact same time on Saturday, unfortunately, but actually reported a turnout of over 6,000 people at the Cotton Bowl. And they played the Houston Dash from down the road, and also the other league. Now, I don't know anything about the Dash, so I don't know, because they're in preseason or not preseason. I don't know if they played a, you know, backup team or watered down team or if this was a starting team. But hey, Trinity got the win, 1-0.
Well, listening to the commentators, Houston kind of did a bit of a mix. But so did Trinity. Trinity didn't run their 100% first team out. You know, in the first half, they kind of mixed it up a little bit in each half. So a nice performance. Now, grain of salt, of course, as you mentioned, Dash is in preseason and Trinity is in the middle of their season. So Trinity is in midseason form. So there is that. Great goal by Caroline Kelly. Nice play all around. Pretty clearly, it was interesting that pretty clearly, like, Houston is faster at every single position all over the field. That's by far the most obvious difference. Touch and play for Trinity is pretty dang close in most positions. Like, those ladies, know how to play. There's some good players. I mean, Wisner is obviously a former national team player, you know, not massive amounts, but, you know,
and a former Dash player.
Yeah, players that have played at a pretty high level, you know, there is a deficiency in Trinity, and in the most notable way was pretty much everybody is quicker, but you could tell really quickly that they realized that. And so Trinity played some really smart soccer, balls on the ground, they're moving it around, they're passing it, playing a possession game, you know, look really good, all things considered, and ended up winning. So full credit to knocking off a team that's, while technically the same division level, is clearly, we all know, it is not the same level. It's effectively a division two with the players on loan from the Washington Spirit, specifically to the Trinity, of course. So a really good game, 6,000 people there, which is twice what they usually get in the regular season. Again, Peter, like we talk about all the time with these friendlies or whatever, it's like, translate that into butts in your own seats for your own games. You know, there's obviously a draw to getting the Dash, and I hope they keep going on this series. I mean, it would be fun to have this game happen every year. you know, make like this, you know, it'd be a nice thing to have happen. Cross league, if you will.
One nice thing to see was Houston added 3 FC Dallas Academy players to their preseason roster. Riley, Albin, Lele, Iglesias, and Brinley Ward. So they nice. All they all got to play, they all at least suited up for the game.
Any other comments about the game? They got their next league games coming up this weekend.
Yeah, they got Lexington, who's the second place team. They've only lost one game on the year, but have a lot of ties. It's clearly a very good team, and they're at Lexington. They're continuing all their road games. Trinity is so. Hopefully, they can put in a good performance. They've been playing pretty well and not necessarily winning. They've got 2 wins, 2 ties, and 1 loss in their last 5. So solid, but not like championship level. Hopefully, still integrating those 4 new players and getting them all going and playing really well.
Moving on to North Texas, who had their debut game this week, Buzz, and other stuff going on with the yep. juniors.
They made 2 signings this week, guys that had been in camp, but they signed them and they both started, both on the back line. They did play a 3-5-2. They play the double pivot because they have a guy who had a really nice game, Edu Nice. Oh, sorry, Nice. He is nice. NYS in midfield, he's a 10 and got a really crazy pathway to get here, but really interesting player. Nick Simmons, the FC Dallas' 2nd pick of the first round, looks the part, big, physical. Like when he gets it all figured out, he's going to be an absolute handful because he manhandles people up front. He's a grown ass man. They played really well. Unfortunately, they left because of the injury situations with FC Dallas. They left a bunch of guys here, like Alvaro Augusto was here, Caleb Swan was here, and Ricky Lewis were all here in Dallas, to possibly be in the team if they needed them. And so then they were left out. Nico Montoya also, who I thought would be starting in goal, did not travel. That one's a little weird because they have 2 healthy keepers in Dallas, so I don't know why he was kept behind. Hopefully he's not hurt or something. But North Texas played pretty well. They moved the ball around really nicely. Diego Garcia broke the club record for appearances at North Texas, which is really cool, but maybe not cool for him. He probably doesn't have to be happy about that. And they were winning the game until late. So Gall's teams, for whatever, John Gall's teams struggle at North Texas sometimes to give up goals late. And they did offer for a free kick. They gave up a goal in like the 88th minute. And then they had some good chances after that, but didn't get it done. And then they went to PKs and you may not remember that they always do, kicks from the spot, and they did not win the kicks from the spot. So they only got 1 point instead of 2, but a road performance, pretty solid road performance for your opening game. Missing some pieces.
They should be doing the 35-yard run up.
There's too many injuries when they do that.
There's no injuries when they do that. Nobody got hurt in MLS.
That's why they
stopped
doing it. It was because people got hurt. The MLSPA, there was too many injuries back in the day. That's why they quit doing it back in like 97. Too many people get hurt.
I think that's lore. I don't think that's true. I'll ask Andy that question if that's the... No, I'm not going to believe Google. I'll ask somebody that actually was managing a team and running in the league and let them tell me the truth.
Yeah.
All right. Because I don't remember there being a lot of injuries in the MLS shootout. Do you actually remember it happening?
Yeah, when they announced the getting rid of it, they cited that as the reason why.
No. That's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, do you remember watching the 35-yard shootout in MLS and people getting hurt from it?
Yeah, people got their knees blown out. I remember Eric Ronaldo throwing an absolute fit about how horrible it was and people getting hurt.
Ronaldo did. Ronaldo did his against Dallas.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, 98.
In the shootout?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Was it Garth? No, Garth wasn't that early. That would have been
no, it was.
Dodd. Was it Garth?
Yeah.
Good for Garth.
He was out for 6 weeks, apparently.
Who doesn't want to crush Eric Ronaldo, frankly? Yeah. Oh, we're going to get a letter from him, probably.
Oh, he had surgery after that as well. Wow.
I'm sure he's got a Google search on his name for that exact reason. All right. Well, very good. Moving down the list, we'll move on to Rodeo. And what's going on with this thing here?
Well, they needed a youth academy, so they partnered with a team out of Houston called Global Football Initiatives, aka GFI. It's interesting because A, it's another academy with a pathway to the pro game here in the Metroplex, but also interesting because they partnered with somebody in Houston.
Don't they have Texoma? And doesn't Texoma have a youth team?
Texoma is a USL 2 team. They had some youth club associated with Texoma, but that was only playing in the area up there around their town, all of a sudden Sherman and Denison and stuff. That's not MLS Next or ECNL. Like, this is a much bigger club. This is a club that has teams in MLS Next, you know, with plays FC Dallas and things like that. So that's the level of club they want to have. And one of the interesting things about it is that they're partnering with GFI. They'll have two USL 2 teams because Texoma is one for this organization. And then GFI also has one of their own. And it's in, like I said, it's based out of Houston. So they're going to set up some kind of system up here in Dallas. It's going to be interesting to watch in the youth landscape. That's why it's important or interesting. You know, we'll see. It'll take a little while for it to pay off, but it's different. So that's worth noting.
Okay. Well, very good. Let's see. Anything else we got to get into?
I got something I think you might think is cool. Do you know who Christo Fernandez is?
I do.
He's
not.
He's the actor life. That plays. Yeah, Football is Life.
Oh, Danny from, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen 30 story.
Minutes. He played 30 minutes for El Paso Locomotive this week.
And in a friendly. USL.
Yeah. So, like, he's a good enough player that they're obviously at least looking at him in some capacity. Maybe it's just a publicity stunt, but it would be cool if he actually was like.
Oh, I thought he was there training for the new Ted Lasso season they're filming.
Maybe so, but he played in the game. So I think it's fun to, like, consider, like, he could actually play. I mean, maybe he wouldn't want to risk his acting career, I guess. But I think it's a fun idea that, like, he could actually be a real player. That would be cool. You remember in the early MLS, Peter, the actor from
Melrose Place. For LA Galaxy. Andrew, what was Andrew's last name? Shuer?
Shue.
No. Andrew Shue. Was
yeah,
that?
Shue.
No.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Shue's brother. Yes, Andrew
yeah,
Shue.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He
yeah.
was on one of those teen heartthrob 20-year-olds.
He was on Melrose Place.
Yeah, that's what it's called, Melrose Place.
How do you forget Melrose Place?
I didn't watch that show, man. I'm not a girl.
It was great. So hot people all over the place.
Yeah, including Andrew Shue. Oh, he was good enough to play in MLS. I mean, not a lot, but that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. I think he was actually one of those. I think I know, but I also think that was a bit to
he
a certain degree.
He got in some games.
Yeah. Again, some games. He wasn't a regular starter. It wasn't like it wasn't like signing David Beckham or anything like that. It was a Hollywood actor on a hit TV show. It was pretty convenient.
He was an actor who could play, not a player
who
could act.
Played some college ball. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I think that's what makes this interesting is he is a player that can act. He was like a really promising youth player and he had some like career ending injury, but to now go, oh yeah, I'm gonna go, you know, division two fun. In the US at like in my mid 30s, great.
I think he blew his knee out at some point, but I didn't take this as El Paso was seriously considering signing him. I thought this was, hey, I'm trying to train, or it's a good fun time. I didn't think it was any sort of serious consideration.
Someone said something that he's on like full trial.
Really?
I don't know that it is, Peter, but I think it's fun to think about. It could be that he is. That's
football is life.
Football's life. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be, hey, look, if I own El Paso and he's seriously interested, I am going to do whatever I can because you know that's going to bring people to the stadium. You know what?
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense. 100%. Okay. Anything else?
The Liberian national team is going to send a team to the Dallas Cup. I assume it's like their U18.
I saw that. Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, they're bringing back referee homestays from England this year.
Nice.
Yeah. That stopped the year of COVID and they hadn't done it since.
You can host.
They're picking. No, I'm past that this time. But they are bringing it back. I don't know if they're taking volunteers or anything. They probably already have booked everybody at this point, but it is interesting. They brought it back. So there you go. I did a video shoot with Atletico Dallas this week. They're doing a documentary about Dallas in the 90s. And awesome. So they asked me to talk about, you know, being a fan and the Inferno and the Cotton Bowl and the Burn and stuff back then, and just kind of the general scene back in the 90s. So great. We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, that's cool.
I saw where they're putting the bar in the office because it was down. We shot it in one of the old buildings down in that area.
Man, so. The renders of that thing look fantastic. I can't wait to see it. It's too bad I'm gone. I can't actually go.
So, all right. I don't have nothing else. I think that's it.
Yeah, that was a fair bit.
Okay, Dan, got nothing else?
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
We did a lot there. How did that get in under an hour?
Efficiency. Roll pros.
I guess
pros.
The Pepsi Dallas game was really boring.
Minimal sister kissing.
Nobody really wants to talk about kissing your sister, Buzz. You never really want to get into the. Nobody wants to hear about the tongue part. They just want to, you know, that's like, dude. We don't want to get into the details.
Stop. Third Degree, the podcast, is brought to you by our listeners and fans, people just like you, those that support us at patreon.com/thirddegree. Since 1997, we've been covering pro soccer in the Dallas area, starting with FC Dallas and now encompassing all the other teams in the region. We hope you enjoy our coverage. If you've been here since the beginning, or if you're a brand new fan, we'd love if you'd consider supporting us at patreon.com/thirddegree. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Buzzard.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here, fellas.
All right. And thank you, DFW Soccer Curious. We will speak to you next week on another episode of Third Degree, the podcast.
Still unbeaten. Kinda.
Third Degree Nerd Podcast.